Hi, this is Lisa Tomei Zonnefeld from Prolific Press, LLC. So wonderful to welcome Joni Karen Caggiano here today. We're so excited because we're going to be talking about her new book coming up. Joni is an internationally published author, poet, and photographer. She is a 2022 Pushcart nominee and has been published in multiple publications and anthologies. Her first book of poetry, One Petal at a Time, will be released actually at the end of March, and it will be in your hands by April the 5th. So isn't that exciting? Also, the cover art is going to be by Francisco Bravo Cabrera. And if you look at the pictures behind Joni on her wall, those are by the same artist. So, Joni, welcome.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction, too. And it's nice to be here. Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so excited that you're publishing my book.
I'm excited to publish it. It's an amazing book of poetry. It really goes deep, deep into the heart and soul. I think anybody that reads it's going to want to have some tissues handy and maybe take it in small bites because it's rich. It's very rich and very deep.
Thank you.
I also want to mention that you do have a website called theinnerchild.com, and that Joni is a retired nurse, adult child alcoholics, she's called ACOA, and she's an environmental advocate. So, wow, you are a busy woman.
Thank you, Lisa.
So, Joni, what inspired you to write a poetry book about your experiences?
Well, in the beginning, I started writing at 7 years old, and I was writing songs, and we had a little band, and we would practice in the garage. So I was writing songs that were very much like the songs that were popular at the time. So they were happy, upbeat, and fun songs. And when I became 17, I had a brief period of time where I was actually able to get out of my house and was living somewhere else. And so there was no parental controls around. And it was just a big wow experience for me. I mean, I was used to being constantly waiting for the ceiling to drop at any minute, always fearful and didn't really understand why. So I started feeling a lot of the emotions that I had suppressed and a lot of the emotions that I didn't allow myself to think about. But when I was out of the house, I started understanding, well, this feels completely different. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing about what it was like. And even then, my poetry was really merged with nature, even then. So that's when I really started writing about what it was like for me living at home.
What was that process like? I mean, that to go back and revisit some of the horrible things that happened in your childhood, what was that process like for you? I would think it would take a good while to write these poems.
That's a really good question. And it has been a growth period for me also, to go back and really feel all those feelings again. I mean, I felt those feelings when I was in therapy, after I read Dr. Claudia Black's book, I realized I needed help. And so I, was able to, process all that stuff. I mean, really, that was back when therapy had you go back through all your horrible experiences, which really isn't the case today in therapy. But so I did that. And but when I rewrote, and it was actually the rereading, I think, over and over again, especially of newer work, it was like, it really was like, to a certain degree, living a lot of that over. So it was difficult. I would get up some mornings and during coffee with my husband, I would just start crying. And I didn't even know why, you know, and I think that those feelings that are never completely disappear. I mean, maybe for some people they have, but they never have for me. I mean, they're under the surface, but I can handle them. And I don't spend my days thinking about that stuff. But in this case, the process, as you mentioned, was reliving and rewriting that stuff and then editing and editing. I mean, you edited, but then of course I wanted to look at it too. So it went through a lot of edits and rereads. And every time I would go back, it was almost like, you know, it was hard. It was, mm-hmm. it was difficult. Thank you for asking that. It was hard.
Yeah. I can, and I recall that as we've been going through it, that there are times, you know, I thought this has got to be the hardest thing to have to, you know, for me to read over and over again, brought back some thoughts that I had of my childhood being also an adult child of alcoholics. And, you know, brought back some of those things. I thought for you to have to go back and over and then even redoing some poems and writing some different material and that, you know, my heart goes out to you to go through that process. You know, this very
thank you, Lisa.
You had mentioned Dr. Claudia Black and her book and how it helped you. How old were you when you discovered her, and how did that happen?
I was right around 17, actually, and the first time that I really realized something was seriously wrong with me. And I really couldn't put my finger on it, but there were lots of different issues, like fear of authority figures was one. Anybody that had any kind of control over what I had to do or how I had to do it, I was very fearful. And many other things, many aspects of being an ACOA. And so when I was in my very early 20s, like I think I was maybe 23, I had an experience with the boss that I had. I had a wonderful, wonderful job that I was very fortunate to get. It was a pretty important job. I had a lot of responsibilities and I loved my work. And one day, my boss called me in and just, out of the blue, and she'd been so pleased with my work and just kind of blasted me about the way I dressed and the height of my heels and that I should change my name because I would never be taken seriously with the name Joni and I should never carry a purse and just all kinds of stuff. And I was struck, just dumbstruck. I couldn't even respond. And then when everybody left, we were in a pretty good sized space and we all had good sized offices. So when everybody left, I found myself in the corner in a fetal position, sobbing. And I went home. Well, I waited a while before I felt it was safe to drive. I didn't really know what was going on. And I called my eldest sister, who said, "Don't you know how sick you are?" And I said, "No, I know something's wrong." And she said, having a master's degree in social work, she had more knowledge about stuff that I absolutely had no knowledge about. And she said, "Go to the mall and get Dr. Claudia Black's book, It Will Never Happen to Me." And I did. That same night, I went and picked the book up. It was a Friday night, and it had been completely read by Monday. And I felt this, I don't even know if I can describe what I felt. It was like, oh my gosh, there's people out there that are like me. And I didn't know that. And you know, we were so isolated that, you know, there's no way that I could have known. I mean, there weren't computers. You couldn't look online and all that stuff. I mean, and we were isolated. So I just thought, okay, everybody's house is pretty much like this. You know, this is the norm. And you get a really twisted view of the world. It's mm-hmm. a sad view to have. And that book changed my life. It really did, because I immediately got into therapy. And I was in very intense therapy for 3 years, every week. And I was paying out of pocket, which was a big deal back then. And it was with someone very specialized who had studied, you know, all of these, there weren't a lot of books, but had written everything that she could and had read everything that she could that had been written on the subject, but she also had specialized and worked for over two decades with ACOAs. So I was very blessed to find a great therapist where I was as well. So,
well, that's wonderful. And, you know, it speaks a lot to how progressive things have gone with mental health, where back then you it was hard. You had to pay for, you know, everything. You know, still people have to do that, I think, but we're hopefully making it a little bit easier for people to get the help that they need. You know, I hope so. Yeah,
that's a good point. I was blessed to, really blessed to have the ability to even get help, because a lot of people couldn't, mm-mm, you know, pay for it. So you're right. It's a lot different, which is a blessing.
Yeah. Well, and then your relationship with Claudia Black has really gone to another level now, because what is it she's doing for your book? Tell me about that.
Well, I randomly sent her a form thinking, you know, it wouldn't hurt to send this form. And she runs two fair size institutions or therapy places where you go to get therapy, inpatient facility, and they have outpatient services too. So she is on the board for those facilities, of course, and the overseeing of running those. And she usually only talks to doctors, gives lectures to doctors. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'm going to just bare my soul, attach the book, and hope that whoever's responsible for looking at this form, because it was a form, will let her see it. And she was the first doctor that got back to me. And she gave a beautiful endorsement for my book, which I will forever be grateful for. It really touched my heart.
Yeah. It still gives me chill bumps to think about that.
It is. It's surprising. I mean, I just, you know, and one thing she said to me, I'd just like to mention this. One thing that she said in her email, I actually got two emails from her. And the second email said, don't ever stop doing something, even when you have no expectation whatsoever that anything is going to happen.
Right.
You know, just keep pushing and keep doing what your gut tells you to do, and trust your gut.
Exactly.
And so I thought that was very kind of her to do that, to tell me that.
Very good advice too.
Thank you. I thought so too. I'm grateful for it.
I know that we've touched on before the about honoring your experiences by putting your poetry out there. How do you feel for someone reading your book that has gone through similar experiences? How do you think that their response will be, having gone through some similar kinds of trauma?
That's a really good question, because I have thought about that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I thought, should there be some kind of warning or disclaimer or something? But because so many books are out there, thank goodness, right? Because there is help for people mm-hmm. now. But a lot of times the books are written by physicians and their practices and what they learn, which also makes sense. And those books are priceless as well. Mm-hmm. But I found myself really enjoying and looking for examples when a physician talks about what the patient is going through, like never identifying, you know, but just mm-hmm. talking about a reaction from a patient to a certain thing. And those were just the tidbits that mm-hmm. really resonated with me as a person, because I thought this a long time ago, but didn't do it. I didn't have a platform or anything like that. But I thought, you know, I should write a book and share my experiences. Maybe it will help. If it helps one person who's isolated and doesn't have access to the things we were talking about and you were mentioning, it's worth it. You know, it can stop a whole generational cycle of abuse and all sorts of abuses. So but I have thought about what it would be like to read it. It's not, hopefully, the mix of what's in there with referring to nature and the things that made Joni, myself, feel better, that there's enough of a balance that it won't be, and the book is in three sections, as you well know. So you can kind of see the progression a right. little bit as I go, and that people will, they're going to feel some of these feelings, you know, as you and I both know, ACOAs have certain characteristics that they fall into. And, and, you know, if they've not received treatment yet, or they've been super isolated and they're young and they get their hands on this book, my prayer is that it will help those people. You know, they'll go, oh, wow. You know, like I was when I was reading Dr. Claudia Black's book, just kind of that it'll help. Right. It'll hurt. I'm not going to say it's not going to hurt if it's someone who's reliving, you know, someone who has gone to treatment and is, you know, productive and, you know, that didn't get into that cycle. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard. Some of it's going to be hard to read, but it's also very poetic. And I think I use enough metaphors. It's, you know, it's raw, but it's not distastefully raw or anything like that. There's a balance there, I hope.
I think you're very careful with these things too. You know, it's what I've noticed that because you are a poet too, and you use that, you know, style with your writing and the poetic style, I think it makes a big difference. And also, when you get, as you progress through the book, you see how Joni grew and how hopeful her life is now. And I mean, you wrote the book. Something's to be said about that. You wrote the book. So that's hopeful in and of itself, you know.
Thank you. That's a very sweet thing to say, and that means a lot to me. Thank you.
You know, well, I think it'll make a difference too to the people who are reading the book. It's like, you know, if this person went through these things and they're coming out the other side, there's hope for me, you know, type of thing. And, you know, I recall when I was going through my therapies and that, and I was reading a book that applied to me, and I was so angry. I read the book and then I threw it across the room. Of course, I went back and got it. Uh-huh. It wasn't a book of poetry. It was a book about, you know, hit to a lot of sore spots with me. Nice. It was exactly what I needed to read. It was exactly the turning point that made me make changes in my life, that I had, the ones I had power and control over, and made a big difference and up to today, you know. So yeah, books affect us in different kinds of ways, but if we just kind of stick with it.
And I felt anger too. I mean, I felt that too. Mm-hmm. I think anybody that says they have no anger at all towards anybody is, you know, I mean, as you well know, my parents are both deceased, so I could have never written the book or any of that had they still been with us. But I don't think my heart would let me do that. But it's hard not to get angry sometimes. And that, you know, especially a long time ago. Now I just, I know that they were sick, and I know that alcoholism is a disease, and it's a legitimate disease, and it was in their family and all of that. So it's rare that I get angry anymore, but you know, every once in a while. Yeah. I'm not going to say I don't every once get upset.
I'm the same way. I'm really slow to anger. So if I throw a book across the room, that's pretty bad for me. But it was actually pretty good too, because it was a part of my process. Mm-hmm. I had to throw away the old self to bring back the new. So
I like that.
What you have to do.
Right. So true.
So basically what we've kind of come up with through this is that the poetry has been a form of therapy for you, and you've written your way into healing, you know, along with all the other things that you've done. You know, we're going to give credit to everything that you've done, not to the poetry alone, but all these other things that you have done have also led to this beautiful writing that, you know, became a part of this book. Why did you pick the title that you did?
I think because I, first of all, I love nature, as comes out in my poetry. And instead of, and actually the artist in the book, Francisco, part of it was studying his drawings too, to be honest. I love it when he does flowers and petals. And I thought about, you know, I picked myself up and formed who I am today, literally like a flower, one petal at a time. You know, it wasn't, and I'm sure you understand this too, Lisa, is that you pick up the pieces of who you are or who you were, and not understanding why you did things, at least I did. And it wasn't like, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, there's a big aha moment when you first understand, even a little, when you're isolated like we were. But it is, it's a process. And those petals represent the building of a flower, the building of something beautiful, mm-hmm. a bloom.
How appropriate. Something as beautiful as you.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. Really, thank you so much.
I would really like to ask you if you could maybe share some of the poetry from your book.
Okay.
Some that you particularly like that you'd like to share?
Well, I picked three, and I'm going to see if this is working, and it appears to be. I picked, what I did was I picked one from each section, as I mentioned before, and as you know, as my editor and my publisher, which I'm so grateful for. It's divided into three groups, and it touches on different things depending on that part of my life. So the very beginning of my life and the high school years and, you know, and past that, and then getting away altogether for good. And reading that book and beginning my, literally beginning my transformation, I think it's almost that word is applicable, I think.
Yes.
So the first poem I'm going to read is Cleansing. And so I'll just get started. Silence is the tiptoe of a fairy as she shyly bursts comfort. Youthful dreamer writing love notes to pixies. In beams, the moon can spare, solace wrapped in prayer under covers. Phantom of shame circles, disgrace like fireflies without flames, ladybugs missing spots, and archaic tainted statues with long ago muted tongues. While willows lament, so plug your ears if puffed up with moss. From primal oaks, if truth offends, boulders of disgrace grow roots in cotton pockets as relics. Intuition dots vistas, piercing words of neighbors, school faces bestowing nicknames, drilling holes in fragility. Vultures with verdicts dripping from shallow humans point at me in devil's regalia. No more uncles, probing privates, entwining among protective bark of hollow trees. Hope nurtures a spirit of wind kisses. Falling gently on unsure budding face, nights bring gifts of petrichor. Sleep grooms my body, God's cleansing rain.
Wow.
That's the first one that I picked.
You really do integrate nature with your poetry. You really do. I think
it's my refuge.
Yeah, you can pick up the gentleness of nature and how it held you together.
It really did. And I think that's why it's such an important part of my work. I'm glad that you can see that in my work. I've had people say that, and I think it's because the woods were my refuge when I was a little girl hiding. So I think I found friends, made up friends, and So the name of this book is Woods and Beast. Even small horror bellows weary. This bedfellow I did not invite. No fairy tales or pleasure to reveal. Stitch up my eyes, a dismal sight. Daytime is daunting as a livid sunset. Ballerina dress torn to a shred. My snot into a couch I would smear. Pulls strands of hair off my head. Afraid she would leave me at a store. Pores bleed. How I yearn to die. Fear swells like a black prickly thorn. Monsters lurk close where I lie. Their diet, liquid, one calling forth beast. Fear howls, wishing I was not born. Old and tired in my teens, yet wise as owls. Praying I will no longer be forlorn. Dancing junipers and snowy cottonwoods call my name in a woody braille. God smiles within a brow of a bright star. This will not always be my sad tale. Only those that own sight will see my scar.
Wow. I want to take that little Joni and just hug her and tell her it's going to
Oh,
be okay.
thank you. Thank you, Lisa. I've had a few people say that in comments when reading my poetry now. Hopefully there'll be people hugging themselves, I hope. That would be a blessing. That would be a real gift. I hope and pray that happens. I almost called you to ask you what to read today because I picked three that are kind of a little bit depressing. But if you read my website, you'll see that I write lots of things that are upbeat too. I'm gonna have a little sip of tea.
And I'll be sure to put your website information in the show link so that people will be able to click on those.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. This is called Open Casket. Smells you love during life, you now have in abundance. Wildflowers grow in meadows. In the vase, they don't stand up at attention. They lay playfully. Gardenias, your favorite dance. Close to your stiff, doll-like head, you would have been pleased. Church seats were in demand, seeing people from the red brick house. My dress was bright, and its smells were vanilla, jasmine, and lavender. The curve in your mouth was painted red, and your hair was perfect, just dyed. Why did you do it, Mom? Sober for the first time in 2 whole years now, since Daddy took his life. So well planned. Saturday's coffee, over the phone, a treat. You talked of the smells on the pier, the flounder you would cook for friends, and the AA program that you gladly attend. Why did you do it, Mom? You sounded so grateful. You should have moved away. Should have, would have, could have. They say you get happy once you make up your mind and there is a plan. Singing, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, a cappella, the best I ever sang, not a dry eye in the church. Two Valiums did the trick. It seemed I was great. Problem was, I don't remember anything, Mama. Come next Saturday, I made a great cup of fresh coffee. I dialed your number. Think of everything I needed to say. Sorry, the number you dialed is no longer in service. Dropping the phone, I collapse on the floor. My heart can see your soul as it gracefully flies. Meeting God in his fluffy home in the skies, we will hold each other and I will love you. You will tell me, sorry. You're sorry, and I will smile. I know, Mama. We found grace. I too am sorry. Sorry for that. My husband must have known I was going to cry. Thank you, honey. Sorry for losing my composure.
No,
through that, it's funny. You know, we don't know. When you have to go do something and you're working a job and you got a child at home and you've got all this stuff going on. And this was the boss who said all those nasty things to me. She never did that again. She was kind. She was just having a really bad day. And you're just, you know, you have only so much time. I literally had 3 days and I had to be back to work. And you're supposed to have a week, but I didn't have that. And so it didn't seem real at all to me.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't. The whole thing was like rushing down there, planning everything, doing everything, and then taking care of all or a lot of the house stuff as well. When I got home that and I finally relaxed, and that's, you know, I worked a week, and that next Saturday, we would always have coffee since she had been sober for the 2 years. We would have coffee and I would tell her everything like you would your mother. And it was such a blessing for our relationship. It was just such a gift. And I would tell her everything that was going on, and I'd go over it in my head, sometimes take notes. And so I got the coffee ready. And I dialed her number, and it wasn't until I heard that I actually realized my mom was gone. Because no one's ever ready to lose their mom, ever.
No. Mm-mm.
Even if you don't particularly get along or, you know, I was put in the situation I was older then, you know, getting help, and knew she did the best she could. She really did. So that's kind of boom in the face. That's what it was like.
Yeah. Wow.
Hopefully you've never experienced anything like this, Lisa, but it's pretty shocking when you lose a parent and it's, you know, a suicide. So there's no preparation when you lose somebody like that. She sounded so good the day before. So it was just, that's really when and that's so weird to me thinking about it now that I could actually go that period of time, work a full week at work, and then literally think, okay, I'm going to have my Saturday morning coffee with mom. And, you know, it was real. I mean, yeah. I really felt that, you know, immensely.
The reality just kind of hit you there.
It did.
Yeah.
Really did.
I'm so grateful that you had your wonderful husband there to support you and help you. Scott is an amazing man, how he helps you with the technical things and as well as being emotionally available to you. So shout out to Scott as well for being an important part of your family. You've all been together for over 30 years now. So
we have. I can't believe you remember that. We've been married 27 years, but we've known each other a little over 30 years now. And as you said, I don't think I could have done this process without my husband, because I needed to feel safe to do my thing. And I needed to feel on days when I was emotional, just like we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. I needed someone that would be understanding, and he really was. And he's also been very, very supportive and help me in every way that he was able to help me. And I am very grateful. Thank you for saying that, Lisa. I appreciate that. And he has been a blessing to me in this process. I honestly don't think I could do that, nor the marketing of my book that I have planned, if I didn't know I had, you know, I mean, I have friends, but it's not the same, yeah. As you know.
Yeah. You find he's your best friend. So,
right. He is my best friend.
Yeah. Really is there anything else that you would like to share that maybe I haven't asked you about, or that you'd like to take from, maybe any words of wisdom you'd like to impart on people who are listening?
Well, I certainly learned something with the comment that Dr. Claudia Black made to me, and I'm going to be doing that now too. I'm going to be more unafraid. She probably knows that's also a characteristic of ACOAs. That's hard to let go of the overthinking, everything, and a little bit of fear still there at rejection. I mean, I don't think we ever completely get rid of those things, but I think it's really important that people stop and pat themselves on the back all the way through their journey. Because if there's been lots of abuse, and even if you know, it took a lot longer, maybe somebody had to be in therapy longer, that's okay. I mean, any way that you can get help with this. And I think talking to fellow ACOAs is a great way to do it. Mm-hmm. And for young ones, Alateen and other places like that, and just getting in a group with people, you know, that have had like experiences. If you feel like you're at that stage where you're still kind of exploring and trying to understand how authority figures can be an issue for you and why you overthink and just all the characteristics that are common for ACOAs. And you will see yourself in these books that you read. I mean, you'll be able to relate. And anyone who has been brought up in a dysfunctional family at all, I believe will relate to my book. Yeah. They'll see themselves in my book. You know, there's all kinds of dysfunction. So I would just say writing is helpful, and writing really helped me. And I never thought I would have a book like this published. So I feel incredibly grateful and blessed to have a publisher and not have all of the whole thing to do. So not to self-publish, but actually have a publisher. That was a dream when I was 7 years old, and that is happening. And so it's such a gift to me. And I hope that when people read this, they will remember there's so many places to go to help, go get help. If you're just learning that something might not be right, and you can always change your life around, and you can feel good about it too. There's no more shame. Get rid of that shame, package it in, throw it away. You weren't responsible for what happened.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Joni, this has been wonderful. I always enjoy talking with you anyway. And this is really strong of you to do this. It's, you know, powerful. And I pray that the souls that read your book will be touched in a way that if there's something going on in their life, or if a history of something going on in their life, that their heart will open to possibilities of a positive outcome.
Me too.
You're an inspiration to others. And I just want you to know that. And I appreciate you. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for all your kindness. It's very appreciated. And I appreciate you too. Thank you.